Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Okay, Jake Odorizzi, number 6 starter on this team, fair to say? Any objection there?
No, sir.
Any objection?
Fair.
Is Urquidy ahead of Overeasy?
Urquidy.
Is Christian Javier, he's ahead, right? Luis Garcia, he's ahead of Odorizzi?
Mana, mana. Jose Urquidy. Mana, mana.
So we all agree. We all agree. 713-780-ESPN if you have objection to that. It's possible he's your number 7 if Lance McCullough is back. So number 6, number 7. Of course, in a playoff rotation, what are you grinning about?
Because I'm about to declare my own
next
rule
year,
like Deshaun Watson. Like, I will not talk about Lance McCullers till he puts on a major league uniform.
You can't do that.
I know I can't, but I'd like to someday.
What about whenever he throws a simulated game this week in Anaheim?
How many breaking pitches did he throw?
He threw quite a bit the
other
day.
What was the velocity?
It was Chandler Rome asked him his last one that he made, his last bullpen session that he made.
Yeah, 93.
That was his fastball, yeah, 91, 93. Yeah. But he Chandler Rome, I'm trying to remember the word he used. He said, are you throwing
discomfort?
Your breaking ball? No. He said, are you throwing your breaking ball with the tenacity that you normally would? And that's when Lance McCullers said, yeah, I feel like I'm healthy.
Okay.
So, yeah, but I mean, we're going to talk
Jake
about the return of McCullers.
Jake Odorizzi, was he the guy that was keeping the cell phone clock on how fast he was throwing and how many rotations the spin got?
He might have been.
Okay, because you've seen him before in the past, right? That's his buddy?
Yeah.
He sits behind him with that gadget that clocks
the speed. I've seen it. I've also seen, like, Fromber, Javier, Garcia, and Urquidy. They all, like, watch each other's bullpen.
Yeah, they do.
And watch each other when they're warming up for a starting game.
Mm-hmm.
To start a game. Yeah,
and then take pictures with Julia for social media.
Yeah, they're friendly guys.
Nice guys.
They're sweethearts. Anyways. So, Jake Odorizzi, the Astros have a surplus in the pitching staff. Right now, it's fine because you're using the 6-man rotation. We think that best-case scenario, you can go with a 6-man rotation. We say September. That way, the 5-man rotation could be making their normal start. They have about 5 games, build up the conditioning
of
what is needed for the playoffs. So, at some point, you're going to have to make some tough decisions. Even if you eliminate the Lance McCullers factor for a moment, you're going to have to move 2 of your starters into the bullpen if everybody's healthy in the playoffs. You're only going to start 4 guys in the playoffs if you're starting 4 guys in the playoffs. So there's a surplus there. The trade deadline's coming up August 2nd. We all know that. I don't think it's unlikely or impossible that Jake Odorizzi is traded. I think it's very difficult for him to be traded to a contender, and then that contender gives something of major league value to you because they're a contender and they're going to want to keep that major league value. I don't think it's like, you know, there's a greater than zero chance that could happen. I just think it's unlikely. I think the more likely way that you could trade Jake Odorizzi is if you trade him to a contender, but all you're getting back is like a double-A player. Like, you're getting back a decent prospect, and let's not say like top 100 prospect or like this can't miss prospect, because let's face it, Jake Odorizzi is not going to command a top prospect. You get a pretty good prospect, maybe like a Diaz that you got in the Miles Straw trade, somebody of that elk. Would you be okay if the Astros and Click trade Jake Odorizzi August 1st, August 2nd for a double-A prospect that has a chance someday?
Here's the long answer. Okay, there's a lot of factors that have to factor in as variables. If he continues to be difficult, if he doesn't like to be the odd man out, if he sees the writing on the wall and he's got some pushback and he handles his media sessions accordingly with it, you don't need a distraction. You don't need that leading into what you're going to do in the playoffs and how you set up your rotation, your roster, and such. And so that's going to factor in. Who you're trading him to matters. If you're trading him to another American League team that you might see in the playoffs and you're helping them to get a stronger rotation, then absolutely not. If you're trading him to a National League team that's, you know, not the Dodgers or the Mets, then you absolutely can consider that. I think that you're still dealing with a farm system that's overly depleted. to where you can't help yourself too much, because the other thing that you get off the books if you trade him is his ability to cash in on his option, and whether it's enough or not enough or too much, however you look at it, $8.5 million or whatever it would be is something that you rid yourself of too, so you don't have to worry about him picking up his option and coming back to you for another season.
Because he is under contract for next year. It's a player option. It is, like you mentioned, it's a 6.5 base, but there's escalators in the contracts for innings pitched that could get him all the way up to $12.5 million. There's also the chance he could win a Cy Young and cash in on one of his other bonuses that he has. For, you don't think Cy? We called him Cy Oderizzi.
Champagne wishes, caviar dreams, and all kinds of shots in the dark.
Were we not calling him Cy Oderizzi in May before he went on the injured list?
Was your tongue firmly not planted in your cheek when you used that?
Cy Okay. I mean, Cy Young, Jake Oderizzi, what's the difference? I love the point that you made about National League. Like, I usually don't care if you trade in division. Like, the Astros have done that forever. Remember, they got Brad Peacock for Jed Lowry, and Jed Lowry's basically been to the Oakland and Houston and Oakland and Houston again.
Pirates.
Can't even like keep up with how many times Jed Lowry's been an Astro and an A.
And a Met.
Yeah, he's been all over the
place. Yeah, he's basically got his zip codes mixed up a couple of times.
But I think Lowry's been involved in an Oakland-Houston trade like three times.
I think you're right.
we were talking about this with the Deshaun Watson situation. Like, who cares if they send him to the Colts? The Texans are years away. The only time I care about in conference, in division, in league trades is when you look like a championship caliber team. So you're right. I don't want him to be a Yankee. I don't want him to be a Red Sox. I don't want him to be a Twin. But if you trade
or a Ray, right? Because the Rays find a way to maximize
anybody you could play in the playoffs in the American League. I don't even care if it's the Dodgers or the Mets, because it's kind of unlikely that you would. I mean, the Mets and the Dodgers. Yeah. Well, Dodgers could use a little bit of pitching. They've been in on Luis Castillo, and the Mets have injuries. But regardless, that's kind of besides the point. I don't really care about the National League team, because if you're playing them in the World Series, okay, you're playing them in the World Series. Like, it's the World Series, and now you're in it. That's fantastic. I would trade them for a prospect. Like, I understand that Jake Odorizzi's been overall a good pitcher this year. He's sub 3.5 ERA. I would even say for the course of his career, he's been a pretty good pitcher. But if you start to forecast what your roster is going to look like in 2022-23, would you rather have Jake Odorizzi, or would you rather have the $6.5 to $12.5 million that you can spend in free agency? Maybe go get a quality arm for the bullpen, which is something that you want on this team, even before the 2023 season, of course. But the other part of it, too, is, like, again, we don't think you're getting, like, Julio Rodriguez or Wander Franco. You're not getting a super stud prospect, but you're getting a pretty good one. And like you mentioned, the Astros' pipeline's been depleted over the years. And they're also older. Like, the best prospects are in AAA, or they're currently pitching on this Major League Baseball team. And I think with the Astros' philosophy, they're always looking to build through the pipeline. The more quality young players you can have, the better.
Well, also the more options.
And you're going to need other teams are going to need starting pitching at the trade deadline. But you can get a pretty good player.
Give yourself more options, because right as you go forward, we talked about the fact that your ability to keep the window open and kind of do the transfer of power from the core four into the new era of Yordan, Pena, and Tucker, along with this young pitching staff, but along those lines, in order to fortify the rest of it, to give you options, whether you make trades or develop a player or two at catcher or other positions that end up being a part of that run as well, you've got to rebuild your farm system with youth. And that starts not at the AAA level. It starts before that, so that you can see who you truly have that can be a part of this team.
And I think that usually, like, between the two of us, between the two Killer Bees, I think I'm usually more of the forest guy and you're more the tree guy. Not that either side's wrong. It's just philosophy. It's just the way that you think about the game. Like, even if you trade for the prospect, it could still be looking at the tree. Because, like you said, it's the options. And what is the biggest concern at this trade deadline for the Astros? Is that they can't compete with the other teams who have better minor league systems. So if you're getting an influx in the minor league system for a starting pitcher who's your number six, number seven starter, is a free agent at the end of the 2023 season, he can also leave this year. It's his option. He could be a free agent this year if he wants. Why not get something while you can?
Get something for him and get him off your books and get the possibility of a distraction out of your locker room. And it's a win across the board. And give yourself options for the future. Because, for all the top prospects that I always say, the kiss of death for the Astros is to have the top pitching prospect moniker put on you or the top position player. Because in a year's time, you're going to find how quickly you can turn that upside down and have zero value, zero trade value, and zero potential in making this team.
Yeah.
I.e. the latest being, again, Forrest Whitley.
Yeah, he had a bum shoulder yesterday.
So the other day, yeah, he threw 20 pitches, and that was it. They took him out, and
he looked pretty good. Those 20 pitches.
He threw 16 strikes, but he kept.
I couldn't even say going that with to a his arm. Face.
So when you look at that and think about the De La Cruzes, and think about the guys that you know, even the Abraham Toros, and the fact that you have other guys that pop up that weren't necessarily on your radar, whether they help you by coming up to the big club or you're using them as a trade piece to get you more. They are a beneficial option to your team, and you can never have enough of those.
It's a value of, I mean, we hate to talk about players as commodities because now we're getting very Daryl Morey-esque, but they are commodities, and you're trying to get a return on investment for that commodity. And while Odorizzi has been a good commodity in the regular season, this team's a playoff team without Jake Odorizzi. Do you envision a scenario where Jake Odorizzi is getting a playoff start? No. Do you envision how you can better use... He does, you're right. And do you envision a better way of using the resources that you're spending on Jake Odorizzi potentially in 2023 by using that money to aggressively attack other weaknesses for your team going into next year? To me, it makes too much sense. Like, the Astros have the second best record in the American League. They could be a seller as far as it goes with Jake Odorizzi. 1-8-9-5 saying there are also teams out there that will be looking for a starting pitcher because they just unloaded one of their own to a contender. I don't know what that means. But he says, so they will need a rotation piece for this year and possibly next year. To me, that's him saying that there's going to be so many sellers or so many buyers out there that are looking for a starter that you probably can get some inflated value for a Jake Odorizzi.
Well, I mean, look, the ideal scenario in all of this, as we've mentioned in the past, is what you did with Toro. You took a guy that had no chance of cracking your lineup on a consistent basis, so he had hit a wall in terms of your organization, found a team that could use them and use them every day, and in return, found a team that had the ability to give up one of their surpluses, which is relief pitching, and gave you a Kendall Graveman, and it was a win-win situation.
But Seattle, to me, was a seller, though. Like, they didn't feel like they were a real contender in the American League. Graveman was in the final year of his deal, and they were just willing to get the best offer they
could get. Obviously, their locker room felt like they were buyers. They should have been ticked.
They were mad.
But Jerry DePoto decided, we are sticking with our plan, as we've been continually putting out there across sports, that the best general managers are the one that stay bullish on their plan, regardless of what the peer pressure says they need to do to compete for a playoff spot. I think that the locker room had a differing opinion than the GM, and at the end of the day, the GM won. And so you look at that and say, look, the worst-case scenario in all of this is, from an Odorizzi perspective, the teams that you would like to part with veterans are not looking for Jake Odorizzi in return. If they're sellers, they're going to be looking for the same kind of players you're looking to get if you trade them for a prospect that is a double-A, triple-A type player that in a couple years could be a part of their rebuild, as opposed to an aging starting pitcher that's got his own agenda that you don't really need.
713-780-ESPN. Would you trade Jake Odorizzi for a prospect at the deadline? 713-780-3776. Also, all right, Blanker's all-time favorite athlete in all sports took some money off his BFF.
Bo Jackson?
We'll tell you what we mean. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Tonight, it's an in-state showdown as Houston Dynamo FC travels to the state capital to take on Austin FC. Coverage begins tonight at 7:30 on your English radio home for Houston Dynamo FC, ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Would you trade Jake Odorizzi for just a prospect? 713-780-3776. 6602 says, next year, no. No, you need a pitcher because Justin Verlander could potentially leave. Let me count them out for a second for you. Framber Valdez is one. I mean, Lance McCullers. And I know that that's, you know, you don't always know
if you can
get
on him next year.
But that's two. Next year, 2023 is what we're talking about here. Christian Javier, I believe, is a starter long-term. That's three. Luis Garcia is a starter long-term. That's four. Jose Urquidy is a starter. That's five. And you still have Hunter Brown. So, like, even if Justin Verlander left this season, you still have six starters who I think you view in 2023 higher than you view Jake Odorizzi. I would also say that there's a better than a 50% chance that Justin Verlander is going to be a Houston Astro next year. I don't believe he's going to retire at the end of this season. I believe he likes it a lot in the city of Houston. He obviously has a relationship with Crane. Crane is obviously willing to spend money on Justin Verlander. He gave him $50 million guaranteed if he wanted $50 million guaranteed when he pitched in one game in two seasons. So, like, even if you eliminate Verlander, even if you don't want to put Lance McCullers because you can't trust him, there are still five starters who you view as better options in the starting rotation, even before Odorizzi.
Yeah, look, you try to balance all this with a grain of salt, and you obviously take best-case scenario, as you mentioned, with McCullers, and I'm open to talking about him next season. But from a Jake perspective, been there, done that, I don't think there's any reasonable person that should see a reason why he should do it again. He can do it for the rest of this, for the short term. Like, because, look, I think the thing that I was most encouraged about with the start in Oakland was his value became relevant again. Because the first start that he came back right off when he basically forced his way back into the rotation was putrid. It was horrible. And it was horrible for him, but more so it was horrible for the organization because it limited their options to do something with him for the betterment of both him and for you. Now, because of the start in Oakland, you hope that he can put together one or two more so that teams aren't scared or have buyer's remorse and somewhere in the process and say, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And then look at it after we got him going, did we really know what we were getting? Which Jake are we going to get? If he gets a couple more starts to do what he did in the Oakland game against different opponents that are better hitters than the Oakland team, then I think that it's the ideal scenario so you can find a new home for him and you can move on. And a prospect makes the most sense for the future, for sure.
I think you could trade him right now. I think there's enough interest in a pitcher of Odorizzi's resume. Yeah, you could get something.
I think the price tag plays into it that he's cheap.
You could get something for him, absolutely. You could get something. It might not be as good a prospect as you want, but you could trade him right now if you really wanted to. There's enough contenders that need starters.
Problem, though, is it's his option next season. So you're not going to get as much as you could if he was under contract for a couple more years.
Yeah, I think that probably weighs into what you can get in return. And if he has another one or two really good starts, then I think it makes you jump an echelon.
And not only that, but now it builds competition. Because now you might have more than one team interested. Now you might get more than you would have gotten if you traded him last week.
Yeah, so I've heard some people say, you're not trading Jake Odorizzi. Well, you could for a prospect. Don't put it past James Click. James Click has made some interesting trades. Look at last year. He traded your everyday center fielder for Phil Maton. Like, pretty good. I mean, all right, major leaguer. And then a prospect. Like, he's made these type of trades.
Yannier Diaz is the kind of guy. That's his last name?
Yeah, Diaz. Yeah,
Yannier Diaz is the kind of guy that, like we said, as much as you didn't think so at the time and you scratched your temple going, what was James Click doing giving up your starting center fielder? He might be the centerpiece of the entire trade and a guy that in a couple of years you go, my goodness, mm-hmm. James Click was playing chess and we were playing checkers.
He needs major league stripes. He needs to earn his way in the majors, but he does look like an intriguing prospect who was an afterthought last trade deadline. So don't put that
past James Click is too intelligent to be in denial mode about how depleted this farm system
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so he knows very that aware there are that. Things that still have to be done on a day-to-day basis to try and rebuild some of that.
See, Not Santa has a really good counterpoint, I think, because this does describe Odorizzi's value. He added you on Twitter, too, unless you block him. Okay. Anyways, it says Odorizzi needs to eat innings through August. Keep the six-man rotation around as long as possible. JV doesn't need to go on 4 days rest until September to ramp up for October. I agree. That is Odorizzi's value. And if Odorizzi's still on this team, that's what Odorizzi is going to do probably through September. And then he's going to transition to the bullpen and be unhappy about it. The thing is, you could get something in return for Odorizzi, even if it's just a prospect, even if it's just a mediocre prospect that has a chance someday. And then you also have Hunter Brown, who could do the same thing that Jake Odorizzi's doing, but you're grooming him for the future. Like, we've talked a lot about Hunter Brown. I think ultimately, like, he is a bullpen arm that could come in, you know, late in the season, in the playoffs for, you know, an out or two, or a relief pitcher in the bullpen. But you've talked about how you want him very much as a starter. Mm-hmm. That way it enhances his development and his growth as a starting pitcher. So if you were to trade Odorizzi, all of a sudden that opens up the sixth spot in a six-man rotation for Hunter Brown.
You bring up the point that I overlooked in the fact that the time isn't now for Hunter Brown in my mind. The time starts next season where you infuse a little bit more youth and you get him into your rotation, which is why unless you
don't... A piece you're counting on, right?
Yes. Unless you don't make a trade or two to enhance your bullpen before the deadline, if you don't make any moves, then I think you have to entertain Hunter Brown because I think he's better than what you have currently in the bullpen on the fringes.
He's got a big league arm.
The guys that you've been hoping to get the kind of innings you're going to need in the playoffs. If you don't get a couple of veterans, then I would give him a shot. I would give him a shot in September, and I would see exactly what he can do in the bullpen. But be honest with him from the get-go, going, look, this does not derail our plan. Starting next season, you are a starting pitcher for the Houston Astros. Yep. And then he knows where he's at. You know where you're at. And then Jake Odorizzi has a clear understanding of where he's at, that it's not going to be him next season in Houston, no matter how he handles a demotion to the bullpen or getting traded or not.
But if you trade Odorizzi before the deadline and you still want this six-man rotation, like, okay, well, you just put Hunter Brown in that spot. You're
absolutely
not really counting on your number six to give you, like you want him to pitch well. You want to have quality innings. But it's best-case scenario because you have such a big lead in the division. So he's getting a great, you know, on-the-job training being the number six. You're not overworking him because he's very young. And I think that actually helps him going forward.
You're
going
to do it anyway. Because we said we've got to see how he performs on the major league level. So in September, you were going to do it anyway.
Yep.
This just makes it a hell of a lot easier because there's no pushback from an angry veteran, Jake Odorizzi, that gets the bitter beer face and talks to Mark Berman and says, you know, I'm healthy. I want to keep doing it, but I don't know whose decision it is. Well, you don't have to deal with all that. And you create the opening that you need to see who you have in Hunter Brown so that not only you can see if he can help you into what level this year, but more importantly, he gets some innings under his belt and gets established in the major leagues looking at some major league hitters.
It makes too much sense to trade Jake Odorizzi. It'd be sad because we wouldn't be able to play the song anymore. But
we'll just tip off the radio station wherever he goes to make sure
yeah.
you do that.
Yeah, it'd be very sad, but it just makes too much sense. And, like, we're even saying that Odorizzi's been good, but it opens up a spot for Hunter Brown. You're not using him in the playoffs. It saves some money off the books next year. It can help your minor league pipeline. Makes way too much sense. All right, Blank's all-time favorite athlete of all time, Aaron Rodgers, obviously.
It is not.
He was playing. I'm trolling for sure. But he took some money off your BFF. They were playing. Was this the one in Tahoe?
Yep.
Where Rodgers, yep. Charles Barkley was giving Rodgers some grief whenever he played in the match, and Barkley did the broadcasting for the Aaron Rodgers ponytail or whatever.
Yep,
so they made a bet. Barkley put $25,000 on the line. Rodgers put his ponytail on the line. So it was a cash versus hair match. It turned out Aaron Rodgers got the best of Chuckster.
How about the cheapskate Aaron Rodgers with the biggest contract that he could ever imagine, and he's not willing to put cash up? And Charles does it the right way. Charles isn't looking to make the cash himself. It's a donation to charity.
Yeah.
And which he always does. He is the Pied Piper in Tahoe, and I've seen it personally. The way the year that they had the wildfires in Tahoe, he donated between $1 million and $2 million to the firefighters and recovery efforts in Tahoe. Dude has never been short on donating cash or putting it up front where his mouth is.
Yeah, that's true.
Rodgers putting up a ponytail? Stop it.
It's really nice hair. I mean, you can make the kid, like Aaron Rodgers'
nice
ponytail.
Tattoo and all things that I don't care about that keep coming up about Aaron Rodgers.
I mean,
I care about who the hell he's going to throw the football to, and maybe he'll spread it around this year. But okay. I was very proud of the Chuckster.
Think about it, though. You put Aaron Rodgers' ponytail up for auction, that's worth more than $25,000. There's some really weird Green Bay fans.
Well, Jeremy, let me just be very, very honest with you. There's some weird fans of every team, including your Houston Rockets. Need I remind you of a game in the Compaq Center when one Stevie the Franchise Francis lost a tooth in the middle of a play and some guy in the front row picked
that.
It up, and the next day it was on eBay.
Really?
And at practice,
I don't remember that.
He was like, you guys are out of your mind. We're like, no, let me show you. The fact that we were worried and concerned and trying to figure out whose tickets and what name the season ticket holder, if they were season tickets, of what Yahoo got his tooth off the floor and tried to sell it for profit.
How much? How much did they get?
I don't think it was as much as you might think, but I think there was like bids in the hundreds, not thousands.
Wow.
Someone wanted his tooth.
Now, Aaron Rodgers, if he chops off the ponytail and it goes to auction, over under,
Mike Greenberg
goes for $25,000.
Under,
like you're calling Rodgers a cheapskate. He had, I think it's over $25,000.
Not a cheapskate. I'm calling him a cheapskate.
A cheapskate.
I think he should have done $20,000. What?
His hair is worth more than $25,000.
I would seriously reconsider a friendship with anybody who bought Aaron Rodgers' ponytail.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. But there's freaks and creeps all over the world.
This is true. We deal with them on daily.
Aaron Rodgers' ponytail goes for over $25,000.
I don't think so.
713-780-ESPN. Does Aaron Rodgers' ponytail go for over $25,000? You know what, Brendan? I'm going to push back on Brendan for a second. If Matthew Stafford had a ponytail that went up for auction, Brendan's in on the auction. He's in on the bidding.
He ain't paying $25,000.
I'm insulted you even think that. I wouldn't take – you couldn't pay me to take a Matthew Stafford ponytail. That is weird.
$25, Matthew Stafford's ponytail. You're saying no to that.
I wouldn't. I would say no if you offered me $25 to take it.
It already comes in a wall mount, so you don't have to touch it.
Yeah, it's in a tube or something.
I have no interest in in hair. I'm not collecting hair from anybody.
But even Matthew Stafford, you love him. You say you were willing to do anything for Matthew Stafford.
I don't know that I used those words, but no, no thank you.
He's an honorary member of your family, and you wouldn't take his hair?
Would you? No, I wouldn't keep members of any of my family's hair.
Even if he admitted to taking all of your considerations about what's a dessert and everything under consideration, you wouldn't take his hair?
No.
What about your kid? Like, it's your...
I know.
But it's hypothetical. Your first kid, first haircut, would you keep a blade of the hair?
Oh, I've done it. I've done it for dogs,
I don't think that's... Okay, dogs is kind of weird.
No, I had the greatest dog on the planet, and it would... Like, that was a son to me, and when we had to put him down, I did keep some of his hair.
Okay, so that's a little different. That's like right before you're putting him down. Mm-hmm. That's not his first haircut.
Nope.
We're like, your kid, first haircut...
But I think Lisa put a few... clips of their
I'm
first
okay
haircuts away.
I'm all right with that. How much would Aaron Rodgers' ponytail
what about first,
go for? Over
okay,
under
getting back to dental work, what about their first tooth? The first tooth they lost?
That's
stop
a tough
keeping
one for
body
me.
Parts. What is going on?
Well, hair's not a body part, Brennan.
Would you...
Neither's a tooth.
You're gonna be going through this, but what if your child's
weeks.
First tooth
6 weeks or so?
Lost, do you keep it? Because I said yes, and Lisa wasn't...
You know what I'm qualifying that answer under? Happy wife, happy life. Like, I'm kicking that question
that's
down
why
the road.
That's
I'm
why
I'm
kicking I was just
that
like,
question
okay.
down the road. Yeah, that's not a... I'm going to kick that one down the road.
The big story is the Chucks
costs.
Are finally crawled out of the depths of the Lake Tahoe tournament. He was always bet upon to finish dead last during the last three. He was actually trying to get into the top 50% at 70, and he flirted with it.
Really?
I hate to say it, but down the stretch, because I was watching it, down the stretch, he kind of choked a little bit. He had opportunities and missed some putts, but he played really well.
Did you text him and let him know that?
No. The first thing I was going to say is so much for when the last time you were on the Killer Bees and talked about your intermittent fasting. I think you're more like immediate eating.
Oh, really? He's not looking good?
He blew up again. Once he went on vacation, it was more than just not working.
Food's just too good. Too good. 713-780-3776. 12 franchises who have not won a Super Bowl. Are the Houston fans the most deserving of one? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
12 franchises have not won a Super Bowl. Arizona, Atlanta, Buffalo, Carolina, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Houston, Jacksonville, Los Angeles Chargers, Minnesota, and Tennessee. Houston, are they the most deserving of a Super Bowl championship of those 12?
No.
You don't think?
Absolutely not. Most deserving? Can you see the man in the window? Do you know what he's had to endure his entire life? Do you know the torture that he has had, that someone should have gone to jail for as much as he's had to endure, that he's had to stomach?
Did they ever lose a team?
Almost.
We've basically never had a team.
Yeah, you got to have a team to win with a team. And besides that, look at we talk about like Rick Smith's problems in the third, fourth, and fifth round. Look at how many of the first round picks the Lions have had that have absolutely pooped the bed.
So here's where I'm going to, and we'll take
your Charles Rogers.
He was taken ahead of Andre Johnson.
There you go.
But they also had Barry
Sanders. In
a nutshell,
Sanders. That's a stab in the left grape.
Calvin Johnson.
They also had this one guy who was really good 30 years ago.
Danny Amendola.
Yeah, who quit too early when he was really still good.
Danny Amendola had some of his best years in Detroit.
That is true.
Yeah.
They had an Eric Hipple.
Who else did they have for just random
They had
dudes?
A kicker that was their best-selling jersey for years, Jason Hansen.
They had Rodney Pete for a little bit. Didn't they? Wasn't
they
the
had
lefty?
Your boy, the Heisman Trophy winner.
Andre Ware for a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, go Cougs. What was the lefty's name with Barry? Was it Scott Miller?
There was a Scott Mitchell.
Scott Mitchell. That's
Scott
what it
Mitchell.
Was. Scott,
yeah,
Mitchell
Scott
was
Mitchell.
The lefty.
Wasn't Miller a Bear?
Jim Miller.
Was it Jim Miller?
They Scott had, Miller was on earlier.
Scott Mitchell
Long,
was with Barry
Chuck
Sanders.
Chuck Long was an All-American.
What was that?
What was that?
I missed it.
I said Scott Miller was on earlier.
Or Queedy.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
That was Scott Mitchell. That's why the name's on the front of our mind. So here's where I'm at with this. 12 NFL franchises have not won a Super Bowl. Are Houston fans the most deserving? The reason that I said Houston is because I agree with you guys. Texans fans are not the most deserving. Two decades of the organization, they've not won the Super Bowl. They've not had the struggle and the agony of a lot
of these
others.
They've won divisions. They won playoff games.
Buffalo, like Buffalo's been right there a lot, have never gotten the job done. Cleveland, my goodness, what Cleveland's been through. And Cleveland actually has lost a team, to counter my own argument. The Vikings have had a long time without a title.
Miss me on the Vikings.
I eliminate Tennessee here. Chargers have moved too much. They're out of here. Jacksonville's out of here, an expansion team. Same thing with Carolina. Atlanta, whatever. Arizona's in the desert. They have good weather most of the time. Why I think, though, that Houston is the most deserving. Because I agree the Texans fans, like if it's only Texans here that we're talking about, no, they're not the most deserving. 20 years didn't stack up with a lot of these other organizations. But if you look at the city of Houston in terms of the NFL for the entire city, the Oilers were knocking on the door for a long time. People love the Oilers here in Houston. The Bud Adams moved them out of here, which was incredibly heartbreaking. Then you get the Texans. You're on a emotional roller coaster. You're on a high for a little while. And then Jack Easterby comes in here alongside his buddy Bill O'Brien as GM and tears it all down. Tears it all down right in front of your eyes. So if we go Houston and not Texans fans, I think that the city of Houston is the most deserving of a Super Bowl title.
Okay. I don't, but I understand where you're coming from. If you include the Oilers with the Texans.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a package deal. Now you're starting to put them in the right context, because now you're talking about things like, I was going to say, from a Buffalo perspective, the Heartbreak Hotel of the Chiefs game is going to stick with you for a while too, because you got that close and got right to the pinnacle of where you wanted to get to and get into the game, and then it was pulled out from under you. But then you think about from the Oilers' perspective, I mean, that's what 35-3 did. And that's what the Renfro game did, and how much you had to endure with all of those debacles as well. So then it starts stacking up, because then as you were rattling off the teams, I'm like, how many of those teams got to at least a conference championship? Well, we know the Lions didn't. So then I start thinking about the Vikings did. The Vikings with Culpepper and Moss.
No, remember they got cut short and they
lost to the Giants. Yep. And I'm going up and down the list. And the Jags had the Mark Brunell, Keenan McCardell, Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor
Titans
years.
Titans got to a Super Bowl. But like that was basically a Houston team. Because it was McNair, it was Eddie George,
right.
Kevin Dyson.
Yep.
Jeff Fisher was still the head coach. But Tennessee doesn't count because they just got their team back then. Well, so did Houston. The Texans did.
So when I look at it, I'm trying to just factor everything that I could possibly factor in. But the one kind of wild card is, if you factor in the Oilers years with the Texans years for Texans fans, then I can see where you're coming from.
If you say the entire city of Houston and the entire NFL history of Houston, I think that they have a case.
But I think neck and neck with the Lions, the Lions have a case to push back on you with going, look, we've been Lions fans our entire lives.
Sure.
No matter how old the people are of Detroit and how long they've been Detroit fans, when's the last time they made the playoffs?
But that's kind of the point, though, right? Like, the Lions have never been
Texans
on the cusp.
Texans have won divisions. Sure. Oilers won division.
But I would say that adds to the heartbreak. Like, the fact that you've been so close,
the
fact that you felt like you had a Super Bowl team and you were lose in devastating fashion, I feel like that is more reason than being a perennial loser and losing all the time.
See, on the flip side, I'd push back and say, no, those are resume builders to where you've sniffed some success. You've been able to kind of get to a certain level of joy because you won a division, or you won a playoff game, or you won multiple playoff games, or you got to a conference championship. And you look at the Lions and say, look, they've had better all-time players than the Texans or the Oilers, arguably. But you look at it and go, they haven't even sniffed the success of the Texans with the division championships, with winning playoff games. So that's like excruciating to think about for anyone's lifetime in Detroit as a Lions fan.
But if you're not building up to that point, like, what's the ultimate pain? The ultimate pain is not winning a Super Bowl, because we're talking about which fan base, which city is the most deserving of a Super Bowl. Like, to me, you almost have to taste it. Like, you got to be on the brink.
I disagree.
If you're a team that's missing the playoffs every single season, who cares? You don't even know what it's like.
There's nothing worse than not being able to care about football all year long, every year.
Like, as a football fan, if you love the game of football and you love your team, and they alternate on a week-by-week basis, gut punches and kicks to the balls, and you're going to tell me that you got to sniff a little success and that means more? But I disagree.
Gut punches in week 17 don't feel the same as gut punches in the conference championship.
Doesn't have to be week 17. There's been gut punch. Look, the thing is we look at Andre Johnson and wonder if he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. You look at the Lions and say, Calvin Johnson's one of the best receivers of all time, and he cut his career short. You look at Barry Sanders the same way, no matter who the running back you put up to. Earl Campbell, if you take the two franchises, you take Earl Campbell with Barry Sanders.
No, Rex Burkhead.
But when you look at it and you say, look, for as good as the players that have played in a Texans uniform are, or even the Oilers, when you start putting into the mix what the Lions, it's not like they have had just absolute dog snot. They've had some all-time players and still haven't been able to do anything.
Jeremy, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. But if you're a Lion fan, you don't know what it's like to be in contention for a Super Bowl.
No, what I'm telling you, though,
which means it's more painful,
is the Week 17 gut punch feels a lot worse to you than it does to people who have actually accomplished things. Because
they're numb to it.
Yeah. You've never accomplished anything else. I'm saying a week 17 loss to a fan base who's not won a playoff game in 30 years hurts a lot more than it does to a Texans fan base.
3527. I'm with Blank. It's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all. Is it? Is it really though? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. 713-780 ESPN. Troy, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I think if you're going to base it on gut punch, there's no fan base ever been more gut punch than watching the prevent defense lose, what, a 34-point lead to the Bills.
Yep.
Exactly. And not go to the Super Bowl. I hang up and listen.
We see that once a year on NFL films. Like the most classic games, the biggest heartbreaks in NFL history. Frank freaking Reich. It wasn't even Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly,
the greatest professional Houston quarterback of all time, by the way. But yeah, I mean, the Texans have had multiple he was a gambler. The Texans have had multiple gut punches. 35-3. The fact that Bud Adams took him away. The Renfro game.
But
the Joe Montana game at the Dome.
But he was leading up to those games, think about the joy and euphoria you felt along the way with every accomplishment. You're a playoff team. You're a division winner. You've won a playoff game. People are having joy. They're able to go out and celebrate and drink more and eat more and have more fun. And now all of a sudden, you get gut punched, and that's supposed to be more difficult than saying, hey, this is who you are, this is who you're going to be, and no matter what you do to try and improve it, you are living in the basement in a moldy corner for your entire life's existence with no chance of smelling success.
The stakes are much higher. It makes it more painful. Like, if you're playing $5 blackjack over and over again and you're losing in $5 blackjack, so what? It's $5 blackjack. But if you build up a bankroll and all of a sudden you're playing $100 blackjack and you got all your chips in the middle of the table, that's going to be far more gut-wrenching than the $5 table.
This may be the first time ever Brendan and I have agreed to this level.
I
think it is.
It is.
713-780-ESPN. Which city is the most deserving of a Super Bowl that have not won one? 713-780-3776. We'll kick it around with the Will Houseman. We'll also ask him that tough scenario that Brendan made us answer. Browns bad enough for you to get a top five pick of the Texans playing meaningful playoff games? If we get Stoots, I know which way he's going. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I'll tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Boy, oh boy, we were friends before, but the fact that what Doc Linville was able to do with the NeoGraft procedure for me, just like he's done for Jake and for John and Fred and so many people here at the station, it has been a game changer. The fact that he came to me and said, do you want your old hairline back? And I said, I'd love to take my 8-head and turn it back to a 4-head. I just don't want to use all the sprays and creams and foams and gimmicks that mask the problem instead of actually correcting it. And he goes, that's why I'm here. The NeoGraft procedure, which I was unfamiliar with, he explained to me. It's all your own hair. Take it from where you have a lot of it, put it where you don't have any of it, or you have thinning. And all of a sudden, just like that, in a matter of a couple of months, you're going to see and get your hair back, and it's going to make you feel better, look better, and the overall extra oomph you get in your day is amazing by knowing that you don't have to just wear a hat every day and cover it all up when you go out in public or get dressed up. It's fantastic, and I love everything about it, and I think it's an opportunity you should explore. When I say that, I'm not telling you you got to do it or forcing you into it. I'm telling you, as an ESPN listener, you get to talk about it, ask questions about it, and find every bit of information on it by talking to Doc Linville and his staff for free when normally a consultation costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com and set up an appointment. It's free for you because you listen to us. Go in and ask the questions. Check out everything from financing to success rate to how the process will go, how long it will take, the recovery, when you'll see the ultimate full results. I'm telling you, every single day from the first day when he drew a Sharpie on my forehead and said, this is where your hairline is going to be again. He has not lied to me. The hair has come back. It continues to grow, and I could not be happier. Be the next in line to try out what Doc Linville is putting down with that NeoGraft procedure and see if you're as happy as I am and the guys are, because I'm telling you, I would do it again, and I would encourage anybody to check it out. 975hair.com.
ESPN.
97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Song always perks me up. Stoots walked in, I was down in the dumps, and then I hear a little Salinas, and I'm just pumped up. I'm excited. I'm ready to go. Luis Garcia night tonight in Hollywood as the Astros and the Angels kick off the first game of their series. Thor pitching opposite of Luis Garcia. Noah Syndergaard.
Let's hope we don't see the same Thor that we saw the first time he pitched the Astros and absolutely just sliced right through him.
Yeah, he was very good. So Syndergaard, Luis Garcia, the pitching matchup, Astros-Angels getting started with their series tonight. As Cody Stoots joining us, the always kind, always great Cody Stoots that you could listen to weekdays, 3 to 7, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Wasn't great on Friday. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he was great.
Woo!
All
right, I'm good.
He was great.
You got a dirty referee. I mean, throws me off my game.
You know, dirty referees is why you lose four bullets. It's why you get shut out 4-0.
Dirty referee.
We were talking about 12 franchises that haven't won a Super Bowl. Is the city of Houston deserving of a Super Bowl more than the other cities that have not won one?
Yes.
Detroit?
Yes.
Oh, stop it.
It's more deserving than Detroit. It already had to lose one of its teams. Detroit's had those crappy Lions the whole time.
Yep.
Right, so you've had to endure more and more suck. Less success, more suck, and you can't just bow out of a team and get a new one to try and press the reset button. You just have to continue to suck.
I feel like if you've ever had an NFL team leave your city, that's the only way that you can even be in the conversation. Because if you have not experienced that, then you have no idea what you're talking about, and you don't belong in the most deserving of a Super Bowl.
I think you're just setting the table for you to win the argument because you know
that's my point.
Baltimore had to deal with it. They won a Super Bowl already.
Well, yeah, that's true. The only one, so to me, the ones that are in the conversation, Cleveland and Houston. Like, to me, it's Cleveland and Houston, and that is it. Carolina and Jacksonville, they haven't had their NFL teams long enough. I know that they're older than the Texans, but they don't predate the NFL in the city of Houston. So, to me, it comes down to Houston and Cleveland. Like, if you haven't had an NFL franchise taken away from your city, then you don't belong in this conversation.
Brendan, I'm not going to sit here and continually to do the dirty work for you. You've got to help me here.
I don't understand. I understand where Jeremy's coming from, but I don't know how to make it any more clear. I think it hurts more to always suck, to be terrible all the time.
To not have football?
What I told you, no, but you have football now and you've had it for a long time.
Well, basically,
how many total years? Genuine question.
I think essentially he had the same problem that Houston fans had. They just still had a team that played games. They didn't have football.
Yeah, but look.
They weren't playing football, but they had a team.
Would you rather not have the Texans last year or have the Texans last year?
In my life, the Texans have had a substantially better they've been substantially more successful
stronger
than the Lions, despite not even being around my whole life.
Yeah, but the Lions won half a Super Bowl last year.
Lions fans celebrated it like they did.
That's actually true.
No. That was the Stafford fan in me. Those are two separate things.
He made the first bid on the ponytail for Matt Stafford.
But that's where your Stafford fandom was born. That's where it derived from.
But the Lions haven't done anything. They haven't won a playoff game in my lifetime. They haven't won a division in my lifetime. They haven't done anything.
Like,
in my lifetime,
how miserable that must be.
In my lifetime,
almost as miserable as losing an NFL franchise. But not quite.
So that miserable feeling lasted for a couple of years, as opposed to your lifetime.
No, it did not last a couple of years. It lasted forever until you got a new franchise that also.
But you got a new franchise. It's like they never got a new one. They never escaped the old one, and they've never sniffed even a fraction of success.
Right. And that they don't know what the
stakes
are. And
they had two of the all times at two of the most important positions. Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders, and both quit early when they didn't have to. Why? Because their franchise was suck.
That's part of them not deserving it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Part of them not deserving it.
Yeah, the fact that they ran off Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson, two all-time greats, that's more of a negative than a positive in the sake of this conversation.
The Lions absolutely don't deserve a Super Bowl. Detroit deserves a Super Bowl.
That's the same thing I was saying with the Houstons and the Texans, though. That's the same exact argument.
The weird part, Detroit can't win a Super Bowl without the Lions winning a Super Bowl. So,
okay. That's very profound of you there, Stutes.
Ain't going to work.
Yeah, Stutes and I agree here. If Stutes and I agree, you know it's the right answer.
It's a weird place to be.
You know it's the right answer if we agree.
Thunder Kitties have never won anything. Zero.
Thunder Kitties.
The Lions. You can't call them Lions anymore because they roar.
I thought you were talking about the
Thunder
Houston.
Kitties hiss and wet the bed.
Oh, I call the Lions and the Tigers the Motor City Kitties.
I thought he was talking about the former Houston Arena League team. Didn't they have the Thundercats?
Thunder Bears. Come on, man.
It's Les Alexander's now ex-wife.
I'm going to go check out a book at the library about the AFL, I suppose. What's the more likely Texan scenario? That the Browns are bad enough for you to receive a top five pick. They, of course, have Cleveland's first rounder next year and the year after. Or the Texans are playing games late in the season for their own playoff implications. Mm. They have playoffs at stake. Not they don't have to get there, but playoffs at stake, and it can't be like the Titans are fighting for playoff positioning. The Texans are like legitimately in the playoff race.
So they're on the in the hunt graphic as December begins.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, meaningful games in December.
Or the Browns are like, or we're checking Tankathon to see where the Browns' number is ending up.
Exactly.
Which is more likely?
Mm-hmm. You got it now? The scenario's clear.
I would say it's more likely that the Texans are on the in-the-hunt graphic than the Browns are top five.
I'm just going to leave. I mean, this is at the time.
Did we just become best friends?
Yeah, if you guys are singing Kumbaya in the next 30 seconds, I'm in disbelief.
Tell us why. Why do you think that?
The Browns went into last year with one of the best rosters in the NFL, and I feel like they haven't done enough to like dismantle that. They're getting some guys that were hurt last year that are going to be back, and I understand they've got a huge question mark at the quarterback spot, but I don't think they're totally settled at the quarterback spot once they figure out exactly how long Deshaun Watson's gone. If he's gone for the season, I believe they're going to do something different. If he's not gone for the season, eventually Deshaun Watson's going to play.
Yeah.
So they're not as unsettled at the quarterback spot as they are, you know, today when the season gets here, in my opinion. And that's a really, really good roster top to bottom. Offensive line, the running back talent, they upgraded the wide receiver talent with Amari Cooper there. The defense is really solid. So I would say that it's very hard to see four teams being worse than them and then be like in the top five. There's so many bad teams. Or there's so many teams that are going to be that bad that I just don't see how even Cleveland underachieving is going to be in the top five.
I think, too, the fact that there's seven teams that make the playoffs. I mean, the Eagles made the playoffs last year at 9-8. You could go into your last three games and be, 6-8 and still be in the graphic. You can be in the playoff hunt at 6-8. I don't think 6-8 is out of the realm of possibility. I think it's the upside. I think it's the far end of the range, but it's in the range.
Look, Code, the reason why I went the other way with Cleveland was the fact that because you and I are on the same page in terms of how good their roster was. But with Baker Mayfield at the helm, and as bad as he was, you didn't make the playoffs, and you were scuffling to win eight games. So if you tell me that Baker's still better than Jacoby Brissett, and Jacoby Brissett looks like he's fallen off a little bit, and like you said, if they upgrade it, then I might see it differently. But that definitely tells me that's even a better chance to step back.
Sure.
You said yesterday that you thought six wins was at the bottom of their range, though, right?
Who?
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Not top five.
I don't know if six is going to be low enough.
No, but when I was forced to make a decision on a question that I didn't
true,
like,
that's true.
I had to go one way or the other.
Throw in the Texans variable certainly influences things.
It could get nasty in Cleveland, though, and you could have a bunch of guys knowing that the season's lost and open up a can of quit. So if it does start to go
Laramie Tunsil wrote a manual on that if they need it.
Here's the thing that's working against the Texans and working for the Browns being bad is the AFC is far more stacked than the NFC. The AFC in the hunt picture was not as crowded last year as the NFC. It was like a six-win Seahawks team that was still showing up on the in-the-hunt graphic
in the middle of December.
So the NFC is a lot more wide open. The AFC has far more overall talent, more better. Think about the entire AFC West. Those are all teams.
Then there's
that
the Eagles as an example.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The NFC is just, it's a lot more wide open. There's a lot more variability to the bottom of the playoff picture, whereas there's not with the AFC.
And that means a tougher gauntlet for Cleveland, who's playing half of their games, or more than half their games in the AFC.
Tougher gauntlet for Cleveland, and we'd be tougher for the Texans to then be in the hunt as well.
Yeah, yeah. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
We're going to get over this ESPN top five or top 10 quarterback list. Mm-hmm. There's obviously an egregious error somewhere in there, and I will
Davis Mills wasn't in it?
No. And then we're going to take that list and jump forward 5 years and tell you what it's supposed to look like.
Time machine?
Yeah, we're going to go time machine, but we're going to go forward.
Is Davis Mills in that one?
Jeremy, you got to wait till 5:30 to find out about that. Plus, we'll find out if I sound like the guy that plays Badger on Breaking Bad, as a caller recommended yesterday.
I watched Breaking Bad. I don't remember the voice of Badger.
He's the drug addict guy that hangs out with Skinny Pete that does a lot of dirty work for Jesse and Walter.
Yeah, but I just don't recall. I remember the character. I don't recall the voice.
Our Badgers don't speak. They just tear the crap out of you.
They finish third place in the Big Ten every year. Thanks to Brendan for doing
Check your facts, Deep Dive.
I have no idea.
Check your facts, Deep Dive.
I was just throwing shade. I really have no idea.
He's wrong.
I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.